Welcome to Up Nerd. This is the final part because there are three acts. This is act three of Baldur's Gate, our spoiler-free sort of going over each act. I am not alone. As with parts one and two, I am joined by Abby. Say hello. Yes, Barbarian Abby.
Me, Abby.
So,
Barbarian Abby.
Act three of Baldur's Gate. I want to start with positives of it, of which there are more than negatives. Positive number one, at least for me overall, anyway, it's just it was very true to the rest of the game. The plot, the characters, everything else continued to stand out more than probably anything else. So in other words, the writing was really good. The choices, player dynamics, everything made sense. And that's obviously pretty important in an RPG, especially one that is essentially simulating a D&D campaign.
Yeah. All the D&D campaigns and stuff that I've ever played in have never gotten this far. So they all fitzed out at the end because, you know.
People get busy. Yeah. People get sick of it.
Yep.
Barbarian Abby killed all characters in a pointless rage. But no, I liked.
Good game.
Yes, I liked.
Good game is good.
I liked all of that. The story, like I say, the writing and characters all helped up really well in the final act because there's a lot of games that don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it holds up in the final act. There is a lot to do. It is a large act. There's that feeling, that groundswell at the end of Act 2 where in a lesser game, that would have been where the game ended, and then it's the sequel that comes next. We're kind of getting the sequel in Act 3 because Act 3 is enormous.
Yeah, that's another thing that does persist as well, too. The map is huge. There's a ton of stuff to explore and look through.
But it really ties the game together in a lot of ways. People do think it's the weakest act, and it is in a lot of ways.
We'll get to that when we get to negatives.
But it is an enormous act, which is kind of too bad because the maximum level that you can reach in the game, and apparently also in Dungeons & Dragons just overall, is level 12.
So conversely, to get back to the positive side of things, I will say that yes, the level cap, something we talked about, it's in the negatives, but levels in the game are able to do quite a bit more each time. So your strength and everything else gets significantly higher. What I really like, though, is Act 3 was the first time I decided to respect my characters. What does that mean? That means essentially take away everything that they had been given and the levels and everything else. And you get to put it all in again. So in other words, you get to put in the stats and the traits and the skills and abilities and everything else, but you can do it differently this time. You can try out a different build. You can make the character completely different. Act 3 was the first time I tried that. And one of the things I really like about this game as a whole is that it's fairly inexpensive to do so. And this was the first time I sort of experimented with it again in the third act, but it was a blast. I mean, I completely redid my main character and changed how they fight. They stayed the same class, but some of the other ones didn't. And I really like the amount of variance you can get. So for example, your Asterion is a companion or player character, potentially. You can have on your team in the game, your Asterion was able to, and fairly often, I think, used magic and that sort of thing. Whereas mine was a stabby murder thing from the shadows, a bit of a glass cannon, but I mean, they were completely different and they played differently. And I like that. And if you wanted to, could have changed it into just sort of being the same as mine or something like that, you know, but yeah, I like how easy they made it to change things around and experiment, play with that.
Yeah, I was, I finished sooner than you did. the game. So I had time to sort of mess around with like honor mode and other stuff. So I did a lot of respecking and exploring other classes and archetypes then. But by the time I'd gotten to Act 3, I'd gotten used to how these characters functioned as a group. And I also went through it. I did not switch out characters at all. So I stuck with...
Yeah, whereas I did.
Yeah, so I stuck with... It's like technically the first couple of characters you meet, although it's not because you meet Lizelle pretty quickly. But mine was Shadowheart, Asterion, and Gale. And once I had those three in my class, in my group, they did not change. So we just went through experiencing the whole thing together, just four buddies hanging out in the red mist.
Whereas I kind of switched people based on their quests and what I was doing at the time.
Gale is a wizard. I didn't see the need to change him out. I think I tried a little bit with him, but then I realized that only wizards and I think one other class, I think druids, one of them, only those two classes can switch out their spells at any time.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just, I liked having Gale set up as like a lockpick, if you will, where it's, he's got all the spells in the game and whatever I need, I can just sort of slot out and slot in before or after combat. And that's just how I played the game. We just four buddies and this is who we are. And that's how we're going to problem solve through this.
Again, I like how different it can be for everybody. And that is another one of the game's strengths that we talked about in Act 1 and 2.
Oh, it got different.
Yeah, I mean, that's something else we've talked about a fair amount, too, is how different our games are. Get into that. I know you wanted to bring up a couple things, because Murder Barbarian Abby missed out on some quests, we'll say.
Oh, boy, did she. But she also had... I take it back. I remember in the Act 1 podcast, I think it was the Act 1 podcast, where I was saying, like, I don't really get how, you know, people are saying they're having all this. Like, I get why it's Game of the Year, but I also kind of don't get why it's Game of the Year. Now I understand why it's Game of the Year. There were entire things that I missed, even as far back as Act 1, that you experienced, and there was some stuff that I experienced, but you didn't. And game can, it's Act 3 when it really comes together, right? Because that's the conclusion of the game and all these things that we've built up to. So that's where you see it pay off.
I've come to realize there's an entire section I missed and I explored, I would say, more of Act 1 than you did. You had missed out on an entire swamp area initially.
I promise you, I was going in with the idea of like, okay, this is going to be my one playthrough. I'm not going to play this again for like 10 years. I want to see everything. So I promise you, I went and I tried to see everything. And yet that whole thing, that whole swamp was just like, never found it. It's not that hard to find.
I like how it's set up in that. I don't think either of us feel like we missed out on anything though at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Combined with, I mentioned this earlier, that it takes a level of confidence in your product to allow yourself to make things that potentially people are going to miss out on. And that kind of confidence permeated this game and really kind of helped its pedigree and everything else. Like, I'm really impressed with it.
Yeah, they took the time and they didn't treat us like baby gamers who have to be held by the hand, which is nice. You can have that experience if you wish. I very much recommend an Orc Barbarian if that's what you're looking for. It makes the game a lot easier in a lot of ways. But yeah, no, so they allow you to miss stuff, and miss stuff we did. But we're also talking like 150 hours each in these games?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so like I didn't get the sense that I missed out on anything. You know what I mean? Like it was a full, very good, very complete experience. Well worth the full price.
Yep.
And apparently there's mods for it. So, you know.
Yeah. At some point, maybe you can go back to it. Not to mention they have continued to update. And in fact, there are altogether new endings, new sort of ways certain quests go, that kind of thing, based on your alignment or what you choose to do. So it's continued to be worked on, despite the fact it already feels very fleshed out for the most part.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the other thing I was going to talk about, because I tried to play the Dark Urge, and I don't like the Dark Urge. I don't like it.
Dark Urge is somebody who essentially is a psychopath, really likes murder and gets dark urges and blacks out and sort of gives in to those awful base things. And yeah, you don't like playing that way, but it is an option for you to play that way and be really bad.
Yeah, it's very interesting to do it. I feel like, I don't know, perhaps it's just because I'm getting older and therefore less cool and less with it. But I feel like that's not something I want to celebrate. It does very much fit into the Dungeons and Dragons trope of like a bunch of murder hobos stomping around a village doing whatever they want, right? Like that is your archetype.
To be fair, that's how you play.
Well, yes, but I wasn't a psychopath. I was just very strong and I had very specific ideas about how somebody of my character should react in certain situations.
You were very bad at talking to people as well.
Well, but that was also not the point. I mean, you don't have to be smart if you're strong. So there you go. But
being able to string a sentence together once in a while probably would have helped.
The worst part was I could not beat somebody in a beer drinking contest. And then I had to hit him. So it's not my fault. But yes, yeah, so there is, for anybody who's completely lost as to why in this role-playing game where you make your own character, there's actually two ways to play. So you can either make your own character, which is, you know, you choose your race, your stats, your class, things like that. Or you can have a preset character, which can be one of the companions that you will get along the way. But there's a special little one. There's a special little guy, and his name is the Dark Urge. And all his character set, you can't change like their background or anything. And it's a little like, it's your typical you wake up with amnesia storyline and have to sort of figure out who you are. And who you are is not very nice.
It's not the usual amnesia storyline in role-playing games, which is you are the lone hero that can save your village, something sort of thing. More like you were the lone person who killed everyone in your old village.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, yeah, I really like all of the options, and it's a great game. In terms of the negatives, and this is something you alluded to, in Act 3, there is a lot to do, and there is a lot to do because, while on the positive side, I mentioned like everything made sense. Well, it makes sense that you would eventually get to the titular Baldur's Gate, gigantic city.
Mm-hmm.
In this fictional world. The negative side of that is it is a gigantic city in this fictional world, and it is the culmination of a variety of quests. So the minute you get in there, your quest marker goes cuckoo, and your entire map is filled with things to do. And this is a good part and a bad part, but there's things to do everywhere, and there's even undiscovered stuff you can just find. You can just wander into a store and it turns out it's one of the main bad guys' parents' house where he grew up.
Yeah.
And you can converse with them, learn a ton of backstory, and then you got to figure out what to do with them because there's some bad stuff going on in the background. It's insane. Like the amount of things you can just wander into. And there's stuff like that at nearly every turn and every nook and cranny of this place. And so, while it is good and it's neat to have all that, by its nature, because it's happening in a city, it just gets kind of annoying. Like there were points where I was just thinking like, okay, I'm good. I've had just about enough bouldering and gating for a while, that sort of thing. I was ready to move on, but then I'd discover something that was just fascinating and get engrossed again. But having to go into every building or feeling the urge to go into every building, explore every nook and cranny and everything. It can be exhausting. Yeah. As well as the second you go in, like I say, and your whole quest markers and everything just light up and go crazy, it can feel daunting.
Well, not only that, but there was a weird, kind of a weird tonal shift. Like, I expected at the end of Act 2, and you're amped at the end of Act 2, and they amp you up. We got new characters who are going to hang out with us. You just killed a god, and we're cool, and we're like, yeah, we're gonna go to Baldur's Gate, and there's an army between there and us. And then it turns out the army wasn't that hard, and we just sort of arrived at Baldur's, like, we're just kind of here at the city now. And then it's like, well, okay, all right, well, now what do we do? It's like, well, I guess we could go talk to the innkeeper, or go see the temple,
or go to the gigantic circus.
We could see the army, though. We could see the tents, and they warned us not to go there as a means of keeping us in Act 2 until we were ready to move on. But we could see the army. I thought there was going to be an army. I was pumped.
Hey.
I was pumped. And now I got to help out with the murder investigation, which is fun. Like, it's all fun, but it does feel like, it feels like it's in the wrong place initially in the game.
Yeah.
Because when you're in a big city, like, that's the normal thing, right? Like, that is the normalcy that kind of gets you to go out, and that's where you find your call to adventure. It's odd that the call to adventure, you start out in the wilderness and then you end up in the big city. It's almost like reverse. It works well. Don't let that put you off. But I absolutely also felt that sense of exhaustion in a way.
Yeah.
Because you spend 80 hours getting there. And yeah, we just had a big old boss battle, and we just killed a city, you know? And here I can go to the circus, and I can see a clown. He's a clown, man. He's fun.
And at the heart of that is the fact that the setting overall, just honestly, is a lot less intriguing than the other two acts. Act 1 is sort of your basic everything. There's a swamp, there's a forest area, there's an underground, there's a gigantic sort of church kind of, well, museum kind of thing. There's all these areas mixed together. Act 2, you've got the super spooky woods we talked about with curses and things in every corner looking to jump you from the dark. And then you've got this giant tower, and then you've got whole other areas and all this other stuff. And then Act 3, you're just in the city.
Well, you're in the city, and I swear to God, it felt like I was back in Montreal again, because it's a labyrinth, I found.
It feels claustrophobic at points, and that's why sometimes I just felt cumbersome to click on every building to walk inside and see what was there.
Mm.
And that's honestly, like, overall, looking at things, that's one of the only negatives I can find. Like, if we've talked about this off air, but to break it down, Act 1 is a 10 out of 10. Act 2 is a 10 out of 10. Act 3 is probably a perfectly cromulent 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
And it's almost exclusively because of the city. The only other sort of negative I could think of is, by the end of the game, I had enough of gimmick fights. What gimmick fights are battles in which you take on an enemy in a video game, and it's not straightforward. There's some sort of alternate goal or something you need to do in order to defeat that enemy, i.e. they have a shield around them or something, so you gotta do something to break their shield. So by the end, I had just kind of had enough of those, the gimmick fights, and it does culminate in a couple of really huge battles, which are an absolute blast. But they
some which are not.
Yeah, they're very time consuming is the other issue. There's a lot of enemies at this point, and so turns take a lot longer than they did way back when it's just you and a handful of others, because that's about all you can handle. But here, you know, their entire army's kind of going at it and that kind of thing. It's neat, the set pieces are, some of them at least are fun the first time. But beyond that, like in terms of replaying though, I'm not sure that there's a lot of replay value there. Because the gimmick fights in particular lack the flexibility we got used to in the rest of the game in terms of how you do things, because you have to do X in order to do something to this boss.
I will say, though, Act 3 has the best gimmick fight and the best gimmick dungeon, and it's probably the best dungeon in the game. It's probably one of the better sort of levels that I've played. It plays like a puzzle. It's a real thinker. It's fun. You have sort of a hard time limit in terms of, like, after a certain number of turns, something's going to blow up. So you gotta deal with that. I don't want to spoil it for people because it was a real, really nice surprise when I came into it.
Yeah, some of the gimmicks are fun. Yeah. Like, that one's fun to kind of figure out. And I think it works because there is a flexibility to it. You and I played it quite differently, for example, I would say. So that one works. It's just some of the other ones, it feels like, just didn't have as much.
And it's all underwater, and it's cool.
Yeah, it's essentially an underwater dungeon.
And then you get to, was it the Char Worshippers?
So that wasn't a gimmick fight. And that is the only sort of other issue in terms of the issues I have with the game. Some of the fights, like I mentioned before, they can be long. They can also be arduous. So that one in particular was exceptionally annoying because all of these people use a certain type of magic attack, we will say, an area of effect attack. The issue is the things that up until that point you have been able to utilize to negate these effects do not work, because there are certain things you can do to negate the effects that they love to use, and they cast it everywhere, darkness. But suddenly, because its attributes have changed and it's considered something different than it was earlier in the game, you can't kind of find your way through it.
It's magicked darkness.
That fight was excruciating. You're almost forced to do things in a certain way, although to be fair, we both did it differently. You kind of funneled, we will say, them into a small sort of passageway. I stayed down below. I was able to take him out, but I burned through a lot of my explosives and just kind of bombed the place into submission.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not fun. It wasn't a fun fight.
Oh, and it took a number of tries.
Yeah, it was more just, yay, I'm done.
And I don't know if it's the same fight we're talking about, because it's been a little while since we beat the game.
It is. You said the Sheriff Worshippers.
Okay, no. So I'm also thinking of another fight with another big bad, which I guess you can decide to make it a fight or not, but where all the lackeys are invincible, but are also powering the big bad. So it's like, what do you want me to do here, game? Like, I don't know.
The gimmick fights were a little...
Yeah.
Once you figure out the fact that, again, you're kind of forced into doing this a similar way each time, kind of stinks.
Yeah. But, again, don't let it throw you off, but very much encouraged to take a break if you need to between Act 2 and Act 3. Act 3 is almost the length of a game itself, you know? Just a standard 20, 30-hour role-playing game.
A lesser game could have been any of these acts.
Hmm.
I mean, look at the Final Fantasy VII remake, where they have literally split each of the discs into an entire game.
Yeah.
And kind of padded them out. So, but I just want to kind of punctuate everything with, this game is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It is definitely going to end up, I'm not going to rank it or anything at the moment, but it'll definitely end up, I think, in the top 10 best games I've played, and probably somewhere in my top 10 favorite games I've played as well, too. It's also at the point where I'd recommend it to anybody. Like, even if you're, say, and hate to kind of generalize here, but even if you're, say, a Call of Duty bro or something like that, it's worth learning the mechanics because I think the payoff is good enough. It feels like a regular event that somebody on the Forbes or on the Reddit or something like that for Baldur's Gate 3 will post, like, this isn't my type of game normally, but holy cow, you know, the characters, the story, and just the atmosphere and everything else kind of come together. And that includes, like, the music, which is brilliantly done as well. All of it comes together to form something that is good enough that it is worth learning the mechanics. Because honestly, I'm at the point now where I look at these games and I go, there are other RPGs where I think to myself, do I really want to learn this new mechanic? This one is, I think. And I think even if you aren't somebody that likes, you know, turn-based combat or something like that, it does just enough, and it's got a great community to help you through it. The community can definitely help you through. Reading the stuff people have come up with, and I usually try to do that after I solve whatever it is, it's brilliant. Thinking outside the box.
Yeah, you remember for a while I was like, I would just kind of toss on, can you beat Baldur's Gate as all cat? Things like that in the background. Like, can you do it with just one hit point? And it was fascinating how many things I learned that you could do. For example, if you had a barrel of wine or a barrel of oil or something flammable, and you made a flammable trail from you to the enemy, and if you had a candle in your bag, and if you move the candle onto the flame, the whole thing will go up. You wouldn't normally think of that. So that's the kind of...
Yeah, there's other stuff you can do, like plug vents with things.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
It's interesting. And it's also interesting that they have accounted for a lot of this, because you will frequently see dialogue that references something you've done or something that happened. It's not expected. And I think those moments make it worthwhile. You kind of hummed a bit, but I really do think, even if this isn't necessarily always your type of game, I do think it's worth putting the time in. That's how good I think this is.
I hummed because, and we talked about this, I think, Act One, because I think if you're the type of person and you're not sure about what, you know, these mechanics and things like that, games like Arcanum, which was an RPG from 20 years ago, but was very much kind of a rule-based, you know, percentage to hit type of thing. I just couldn't get my head around the actual mathematical systems of how things are calculated and stuff like that. I'm going to say, if you're the type of person who's not better versed in this particular kind of nerdery, get yourself an orc barbarian and just have one character that can just swing through anything. You will find characters that fill out the other archetypes. You'll find a cleric. You'll find a wizard. You'll find a rogue. And you can change them all at any time. I actually quite like the druid. So there's certain classes that I would say start out with. But orc, barbarian, fighter, make it easy for yourself. Get into it. And then you can always reroll another character. Or play the game again, you know? And I remember I was watching you play and I was looking at you and the fights that you were getting into, and you were playing a fighter, but I still had that feeling of like, oh, this is going to be one of those games, you know, percent based chance to hit or something like that. So I made it easy for myself and I really, really enjoyed it. And now I'm Babby, the Barbarian Abby. Yeah, no, good game is good.
Yeah.
Game of the year. Game of the year of last year, game of the year of this year, widely regarded as one of the greatest games of all time. It's a good game. It's a good game. If you're thinking about it, do it, but set yourself up for success and be an orc barbarian.
Nope.
Can I leave some pamphlets with you? Some literature, just a little bit of information. Just do you have 5 minutes? I can come in and just, you know, come and get a cup of tea.
No. So you wanted to get into this too, but in terms of, we've mentioned it and hinted at it before, there's a lot of things in this game. It takes a lot of chances with regards to allowing the player to miss content and really just being a complete game out of the box for your money, which is why it's worth full price if you decide to pick it up, versus there's very much a trend in gaming to be the opposite of either of those experiences.
Yeah.
And this just skips all of that. There's no microtransactions or anything else. You have the ability in this game, if you don't like how your character or any of your party are made up, you can use a very low price in game of gold, like the fictional.
Yeah, it's like 100 gold. It's not a lot.
You're not paying real life money for it, is my point. There are games now that want you to pay real life money for the ability to do that.
Yep.
It's becoming more prevalent. It's frustrating because a lot of the gaming studios, or rather the people who greenlight games, who are frequently not the ones that make them or play them, are taking all the wrong lessons from Baldur's Gate 3 and applying those to their games and not the stuff that people like, which is, this is a complete game. This game is not going to try to nickel and dime me after I buy it. This game paid everybody fairly for their work. This game gets LGBTQ plus representation brilliantly well, and really everybody can play it and have a variety of options. It combines everything. They really didn't do anything wrong with it. And everybody just kind of the people who greenlight games have taken all of the wrong lessons from it, which is, well, we need to have a long game and we need these mechanics, but we're just going to ignore all the other stuff. And oh, hey, will people pay for these mechanics? Let's find out. So I think also you get games and you get franchises that become sort of shambling corpses with entries that nobody cares about and people just work on out of obligation because, well, got to keep a job. And there's a wide variety of those. I mean, Assassin's Creed is just a shell of itself. Call of Duty. There's so many of those. And I think that's another issue that Larian has been able to avoid. And they're trying to avoid it further because they've said they have no interest in working on a Baldur's Gate 4. And I think that's the right decision for them. I don't really want them to do another one. I don't want them to have to enter into a partnership as well, because the other thing that's killing the games industry is the Embracer Group stuff. Embracer Group is a gigantic conglomerate that for years and years tried to make its portfolio look larger than it was by purchasing smaller game studios, eventually acquiring a significant percentage of game studios worldwide. Well, turns out it didn't pay off because they weren't able to get sold for what they wanted, which was the whole point of this, inflating their value just so that they could make some money in a sale. Come to church to find out they couldn't. And because of that, it's absolutely crippled the entire industry with close to, if I remember right, at one point, it's close to 27% of the entire industry has been laid off in the past year and a half, which is ridiculous. So it's not, it's been very unpleasant. It's, and this bucks the trend. So, you know, so I guess that's another area that Larian and Baldur's Gate kind of bucks the trend as well. Like I said, they apparently are a good working environment and everybody got paid for their work. The voice actors, you know, for example, are ecstatic with their pay and with the work they did on the game, to the point that they willingly reprise those characters at conventions or like they're just happy to be those people and to embody that, and that people enjoyed it. There's a sense of joy from the game and the entire community that's missing from a wide variety of stuff that we've talked about or think of. And again, I feel like it's all kind of owed to how differently the game was done and developed and everything else. It's just, it's the game as a whole just was a joy to play and to experience. And then outside of the game was also a joy. It's fun to go to the Reddit. It's fun to read stuff on the Baldur's Gate forums and that kind of thing. The community is very pleasant and inclusive. There's no sort of yelling at each other for things, or, you know, it's not every other internet forum.
Yeah. No, it's good. I do have one fear, which is that this is a gateway to Dungeons and Dragons. And I have mixed feelings about that, because Dungeons and Dragons as an idea, I adore. Use your imagination, have fun with your friends, go on adventures. The company that controls Dungeons and Dragons, I'm not a big fan of.
Wizards of the Coast.
Wizards of the Coast. They sent the Pinkertons.
It's not great.
I didn't even realize they existed still. So I am glad, and I suspect that that's also partly why Larian doesn't want to have anything to do. Like, we're not making Baldur's Gate 4. Because I suspect that Wizards of the Coast didn't think that this was going to be as big as it was.
Wizards of the Coast also merged with Hasbro, not a very pleasant company to deal with.
Yeah.
Why would you get into that if you don't ask? Mm-hmm. They're kind of at a point where they can sort of write their own ticket now.
Yeah. So I think probably Wizards of the Coast thought this would be, you know, lucrative. Obviously, they gave them the license to Dungeons and Dragons to use. I don't think they thought it would be this enormous. So I suspect that anybody who makes Baldur's Gate 4, whatever, is going to have to pay out the nose, if they're lucky, for the ability to do that, because Wizards knows what it has now, or what it thinks it has.
Yeah, there's going to be expectations placed on them. That's part of the issue we're getting at, by the way, is that by and large, this is a niche title to a certain extent, right? Normally this would be a title that you feel good if it sold 500,000 copies or something like that. You'd feel great about that. Well, it sold 9 million plus. And because of the way the game industry is, it's going to be expected. Well, okay, well, Baldur's Gate 4 has got to sell 11 million or else in the first month or whatever. Cause I mean, by now it's well over 9 million mark anyway.
Well, and we're going to charge you for the D&D license if you're going to make a $9 million sellable product, and then you get into trouble.
But
we're going to start seeing DLC because you got to.
Yeah. My point is though,
sell 9 million.
Yes. That, and you got to bring in more money for us. Like that's going to be the expectation, and that's the problem. That's probably the biggest issue with the video game industry, because the shareholders or whoever it is at Hasbro are going to go, okay, we made X amount of money in dividends for Baldur's Gate 3. Boy, we better make, you know, X higher for Baldur's Gate 4, or else this is a complete disaster.
Yeah. Go do this again, but better. It's like,
and
well,
shorter,
sir,
unless...
we can't do this again, but better. We didn't do it the first time.
Yeah.
And even if we did, like, there was apparently planned downloadable content, so like extra content that you could pay for that comes out later for Baldur's Gate 3, but I think it was the CEO, I think his name is Sven, I don't know what his last name is, but he noticed that everybody in the office just looked tired, like they were not enjoying working on it, so they just decided to leave that money on the table.
Yeah, we're not going to do it,
because it's better that way. It's a complete game. It's fine. It's great. We can have a nice thing.
And like I say, it's that, you know, again, this is something for the future to be concerned about. But again, Baldur's Gate 4, which is inevitable, whoever gets that is just in for a world of hurt. And that's the problem with the game industry. They're going to, not only what we mentioned, but they're also going to be expected to do it on, you know, half the budget and a third time. You know, they're going to request Baldur's Gate 4 or whatever in 1 or 2 years, which is just not feasible. This game was in development for more than 5 years total. and it was crowdfunded initially.
Yeah, but only for like a tenth. I didn't realize this, but this was a $40 million game?
Yeah. And it was in early access for a time as well, helped fund that too. Remember.
Yeah.
So it had a long gestation period. And you look at, I think the exact same thing is going to happen with Baldur's Gate 4 that happened with The Witcher 3 into Cyberpunk 2077. They're going to be asked, okay, you need to do this again, but it's got to be way shorter. You got to earn us more money. And there's got to be things we can tack on for more money.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be a complete disaster. The game, in the end, by the way, we'll mention Cyberpunk 2077 is fantastic. But holy cow, did it take a long time? It was busted, awful launch. And they were looking to, I think inevitably, if the launch had actually gone well, a lot of these fixes, things that made it better and made the game work in the end, they would have charged for those. I have no doubt that there would have been pressure on the studio to charge money for all these fixes. But in the end, they had to kind of add them on just to appease a fan base who, frankly, bought a very broken game at launch.
Yeah, we're starting to see, we're going to sort of rag on Bethesda because it's popular and easy to do. They make it easy, but, you know, their last big sort of Baldur's Gate 3 level hit was Skyrim back in 2011. It's 2024 now. They have released Skyrim. They've run that into the ground. They're trying to do it with the Fallouts. It's not working out. And it's, you know, it's for that same reason. It's, we can just have nice things. But in a system that requires constant growth, you can't have something that just performs to expectations. It has to always be outdoing itself, which is exhausting for anything and anyone. And it's not sustainable. So I guess enjoy things for what they are.
Yeah. And this is a game that you can definitely enjoy for what it is, straight out of the box or internet box or however.
Yep. Well worth it.
Yep.
Well worth it.
So, if you want to discuss Baldur's Gate 3 or anything else regarding UpNerd Podcasts, you can find us on Gmail, upnerdpodcasts@gmail.com. You can find us on X or Twitter, which is @UpNerdPodcasts. You can find us on the much less depressing Blue Sky, which is upnerdpodcasts.vsky.social. And you can find us on Facebook, UpNerdPodcasts. Up next, we have, fine, you pick for Jurassic Park. That's going to be a blast. I'm really looking forward to that one. Yeah. I am also looking forward to, then we'll have a top three, bottom three, 2 weeks after that, of Seinfeld, which I am greatly looking forward to as well. And honestly, the variety
is going to be a good discussion.
Probably going to be Fallout, I expect. Yeah. Speaking of Bethesda things.
And I think you said we had an astute UpNerd listener whose choice is going to be coming up next.
Yes. No, that's fine. You pick after Jurassic Park 3 or Jurassic Park 1. Oh, God. We're not doing Jurassic Park 3. No.
Canon.
That is the, we'll announce and talk about that during that episode. But that is next.
I'm excited.
Yes. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Oh, baby.